This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. School choice advocates had lots to cheer about this week on Capitol Hill and at the New Hampshire State House. In Washington, the Senate Education Committee approved President Trump's education nominee, Betsy DeVos, in a party line vote yesterday. DeVos is a longtime advocate of private school vouchers and charter schools. And here in the Granite State, another supporter of school choice, Frank Edelblum, is nominated to be state education commissioner, although faced some tough grilling from Democrats on the executive council yesterday. Meanwhile, the New Hampshire House debates a slew of choice-related bills this week, from tuition tax credits to charter schools. Today in The Exchange, we study up on school choice. It's part of NPR and NHPR's coverage of the first 100 days of the White House and the State House. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have two guests for the hour. With us in studio is Carl Ladd. He is executive director of the New Hampshire School Administrators Association. Before that, he was a superintendent, a principal, and a teacher. Carl, welcome back. Good to see you.
Nice to be here.
Also with us, Kate Baker, executive director of the New Hampshire Children's Scholarship Fund and a longtime advocate for school choice. And Kate, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
I'm so happy to be on the show.
Well, I want to ask both of you what school choice means to you, because different people hear that term differently. But first, let's hear New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu describe it in an event celebrating school choice last week.
One thing that we are committed to is what we're talking about today. It's opening up the doors to school choice opportunities for all families, regardless of how much money you may make. Everybody needs to have the opportunity to provide the best path for their kids, and that's just going to be a focus. And whether it's providing more funding for charter schools, opening up options for homeschooling, looking at where the business tax credit comes into play in terms of funding some scholarships and options, all of those are pieces that come in that I think can provide better opportunities for the people in New Hampshire.
Again, that's Governor Sununu at an event supporting school choice last week, talking about what that means to him. And Kate, to you first, please. So when someone says you're a supporter of school choice, what does that mean? How would you answer it?
In my mind, it really does mean breaking down barriers for children to ensuring that they get the education that's the right match for them. You know, whether it's a charter school or homeschooling or a private school or our career tech ed centers that we have in New Hampshire, in my mind, it's let's open all the doors to all the buildings and all the opportunities so that children, you know, particularly low-income children who otherwise wouldn't have those opportunities, now can access everything.
What do you mean by the word barriers?
Well, for example, choosing a private school, the tuition would be a barrier, you know, for a family who was low income. For example, one of our families is their employment is they do the deliveries of the soda. You know, you see the man delivering the soda at the convenience stores and stocking the shelves, right? So a person like that earning maybe $30,000 or $40,000 a year doesn't have the same purchasing power who someone maybe like Carl or I has, right, where we could say, I want to send my child to this XYZ school and we could make it happen. And so removing those barriers, particularly for low-income families, is really the way that I look at school choice.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that for sure. So removing financial barriers. Carl Ladd, what does school choice mean to you? Again, it means something different to different people.
Well, I think New Hampshire has a rich history of school choice already. We have public charter schools. We have homeschool laws that have eliminated many barriers to any sort of accountability around homeschool. Public schools no longer have any authority over homeschool children or their education or curriculum. Those barriers have long been taken down, if you will, if it was considered to be a barrier. I think that we have multiple opportunities in this state for students to get the excellent education that they need. And I think that school choice, for me, is really what kinds of opportunities can we provide within the public school system for our children? Because using the example that Kate used, if we have a parent who has a difficult time trying to transport their child to a private school. Who's going to pay for that? How is that going to happen? I think that this is a much broader conversation and a bigger topic. I think people try to put it into neat and easy boxes, and that's just really not the case.
Well, and a little bit later in the show, we'll hear from someone who has worked on this issue in the North Country, and he talks about that, Carl, that, you know, access is also an issue. You know, advocates of school choice often say it's time for a 21st education system. We've heard a lot about that this week. Carl, to you first, how does that statement hit your ears? Does that mean that we're not providing a 21st century education right now?
Well, I think that there seems to be this common misperception that people have what I call their museum of school that they hold in their head of times when they went to school. And public schools have changed dramatically. I keep hearing about the antiquated public school system. The system itself may be antiquated in that it started with Horace Greeley and has the funding and the foundations are the same. But what happens within the walls of schools has changed dramatically just in the last 10 years. You know, I think about all the technological advances, the work that schools are doing around competency-based education and mastery of competency, around extended learning opportunities. All of these things are happening within the public school system and the public school setting. And I think that, you know, we are already working toward providing a 21st century education. Unfortunately, many schools are hampered with a 19th century funding system around the property tax, which has really hamstrung districts in trying to innovate and move forward.
Go ahead, Kate.
So I watched a session that Paul LeBlanc, who's the president of Southern New Hampshire University, did, where he was talking about the future of education. And the way he described his vision and what they're trying to do at SNU, and I think what people are talking about in general, is he had two flow charts, and one of them had a building in the middle, and then children and teachers and people around the building in this circle like that. And he said the future was a second flow chart where he had the person in the middle, right? And around the person was the schools and the programs and online programs and teachers and tutors. And it was the student-centered, with the options going around the student for the student to choose, versus the building in the center, at the way that he described it as the old model, where the center is the building and then the people come to the buildings. So I think that's what people are talking about, a student-centered model.
Hard to do, though, when you have 28 kids in a classroom, because your funding doesn't allow you to do smaller classes.
Right? If you use technology, if you use flexible groups. I mean, there's a lot of cool things, innovative things. Like if you look at Pittsfield and the way Pittsfield is doing project-based and collaborative learning, people have been writing about that nationwide. I think that's what people are talking about when they're talking about 21st century. You know, in my mind, we have incredible public school options in New Hampshire, some of the best public schools in the nation. We also have some of the best private schools in the nation, right? And so in my mind, it's like throw the doors open to all of these incredible education opportunities. Why wouldn't we even help low-income kids, right, to be able to access those high-quality private schools also?
Carl, I'm guessing you're thinking we're already doing this stuff in the public schools.
And we're doing it under tremendous regulation and tremendous constraints. Each community is different in what they expect for their children. We are a local control state in the state of New Hampshire. The local communities, the local school boards dictate what happens within their communities, and rightly so. But I think that we have an opportunity and a responsibility to look at public education as a public good. It is for all the citizens.
Well, and I would say private education is a public good, too. And homeschooling is also.
But
all
private education is a commodity.
Also.
Because a private school, public schools have to take all the children, regardless of their background, regardless of their socioeconomic status, regardless of their disability. And private schools have the opportunity to say, no, we don't want that. Public schools have to take all the children, regardless of their background or disability, and that creates a different set of barriers, if you will, to innovation and to the type of throwing the doors open that you're talking about, Kate.
Well, so many people want to jump into our conversation already, and we've not even been on the air for 10 minutes. So let's go to our listeners. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And let's go first to Hopkinton. Sarah's on the line. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I'm really glad that Carl pointed out the difference between the ability of public schools to, or the ability of private schools, rather, to turn away students. I have another question about the difference between public schools and private schools, where I see my investment and through my property taxes in education as an investment in tomorrow's citizens. The children of today are going to be voting tomorrow, and I want to know, and I'm glad that I have the accountability through my local school board to find out, what are they learning? Are they learning what science really is and how science is done? Are they learning the difference between facts and alternative facts? And do private schools offer, if we were to move to a voucher system or some other system where any child would be going to any school, do we have the ability to hold those schools accountable that are taking our tax dollars? And are they training tomorrow's citizens to really be wise participants in our democratic society?
Okay, Sarah, thank you very much for the call. And Kate, I'll turn to you on that.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate her thoughts for sure. What I like about our scholarship program, the way that it's structured in New Hampshire, is we're accepting contributions, private money and not public money. And so when we're offering a scholarship to a child, it really is for the education that best meets their needs. So that accountability and the public money discussion, I think, is a whole different discussion, at least than what we're providing at Children's Scholarship Fund, which really is looking at the individual child and helping them to overcome the barriers to getting the education that's the right fit for them. I know now I'm talking logistics instead of kind of that 50,000-foot view, but in my experience, it seems like you wouldn't want to limit opportunities for an individual child, right? Whether or not, you know, big picture, like we're all going to agree on everything all the time, I don't know if that's even a possibility. But I do know that when it comes to the individual human being, that shouldn't we, you know, again, open all the doors and try to remove any barriers for that child so that, you know, for example, if they wanted to attend a Montessori school where it was all hands-on because they had a, we have right now a child with an IEP who participates in our scholarship program, who attends a Montessori school because a hands-on environment is right for them, then I feel like, isn't that our responsibility to New Hampshire children to make that possible for that child?
Just to make it crystal clear, Kate, because Sarah, our caller, raised this. So unravel the money for us of these tuition tax credits. The
sure.
tuition tax credit comes from business donations.
That's right.
Who do get, though, right,
sure,
a benefit on their own taxes.
Some of
yeah.
it. Just like you would subtract a donation that you make to the Red Cross or traditional nonprofit, it's a tax-deductible donation, and they get to take a credit. For example, there's a lot of other tax credits in New Hampshire, like the CDFA tax credits, where a business can donate to, you know, like when they built the
Community
wing on the Boys and Girls
Finance
Club.
Authority,
well,
yeah.
yeah, they're nonprofit projects that encourage businesses to donate to it. So for me, I've been excited to be, in essence, raising all new money now dedicated to education.
So could someone make an argument that business is getting a tax credit to give to your organization would be the same as public money, because otherwise that money would have gone into public business taxes?
They couldn't. That's already gone all the way to the Supreme Court. The reason that they threw the court case out on standing is exactly that. The fact that when you make a donation, Laura, to a nonprofit, whether you take a tax deduction or a tax credit, honestly, doesn't make it someone else's money. It really is a private contribution. And so that's the exciting part about this, is that we're really able to empower children.
Go ahead, Carl.
I just want to jump in a little bit on the court case. The court case was dismissed on standing. The judges did not discuss the merits of the case at all. So it was simply dismissed because the person who brought it forward didn't have standing.
Right. And that's because it's private money. That's why the U.S. Supreme Court dismissed it and the New Hampshire Supreme Court, because when it's private money, you don't have standing.
All right, we're going to set that aside for just a moment, but I do want to bring another voice into our conversation, someone in the legislature who's been working for a long time on these issues. Mel Myler is with us, Democratic state rep from Hopkinton, minority leader of the House Education Committee. And Representative Myler, thank you for being with us.
Oh, glad to be with you, Laura.
Well, you've sponsored a number of bills that school choice advocates don't like. They're urging the House to vote against pretty much everything you've put forward. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think one of the issues is the question of as Carl has already mentioned earlier, is that on the school voucher, tax credit voucher thing, as an example, $385,000 did not go into the state treasury as a result of this program. And 70% of those scholarships that were let out by Kate were to religious schools. And I do believe that we should not be paying public monies to go to religious schools. And so that's one of the reasons why I brought that particular issue forward.
A bill to repeal the education tax credit program.
Exactly right. The other thing I think it's important to note, too, is that according to the State Department, in the years 2014-15, we don't have the 15-16 data yet. We had 200,000 students, basically, in the state. And there is school choice. I mean, you have 9% of those students, about 17,000, choose non-public. They either go to independent schools, they homeschool their children. We had about 3,000 students who were going to our public charter schools, about 1%. We had 2% that had chosen to go to academies. And don't forget, we have two academies basically in the state, that being Co-Brown and Pinkerton Academy. And then we had 88% parents chose to send their children to their local school.
So let me just make sure I got that right, Representative Myler. So of all the school kids in New Hampshire, sounds like about 88% go to their regular district public schools and 12% do something else.
Well, you'd have to include the academies because those are public.
Okay.
Schools.
So go ahead.
So you would have 90% of parents who their choice is to go to their regular schools, and you have other parents who the other 10% or the other 9% choose to send their children to other schools. So we do have choice in this state. There's no question about that. And I think the other those 90% that chose to go to their regular schools recognize that our public schools in this state rank fourth in the nation as it relates to quality and adequacy.
Let's talk a little bit more about choice, Representative Myler. You know, some low-income family in Manchester might like to go to a high-quality school like you have in Hopkinton, but they don't have the money, they can't make the transportation, they can't make it happen. So what choices do they have?
Well, here's the dilemma you have. Here's the problem you have. The average amount that the Kate's group gave last year was about $2,500. Well, if you have $2,500, and then let's say I want to go to Concord Christian School. Concord Christian School High School is about $13,000 a year. So somewhere, the family that has basically 300% the poverty level, which is about $72,000, they then have got to come up with another $10,000-$12,000 to meet that tuition. And so the question is where do they get that? And they may get it through some tuition rebate from the school, et cetera. It's a huge leap to have an impoverished parent come up with that kind of money to send the child to another school. In Manchester, for example, there are several charter schools that a parent could choose to send their child to if, in fact, they feel that they need to have a different kind of a curriculum for them. So I think there are, within the public system, there are opportunities for children to go to alternative schools.
Well, Representative Myler, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
And thank you very much. Bye-bye.
That's Mel Myler. He's a Democratic state representative from Hopkinton, minority leader of the House Education Committee. Now, after a short break, we'll hear from someone at a private school that does have some children who attend the school because of the voucher program. So we'll talk more about that. We'll also turn our attention to charter schools, some of the issues surrounding that, and we'll hear from you. So stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, school choice. facing favorable political winds these days with vocal support at the state and federal levels. We're finding out what this means, how it might affect education for all kids. And let's hear from you, your questions, comments, and of course, personal experiences are welcome at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Our guests in studio are Carl Ladd, Executive Director of the New Hampshire School Administrators Association. He's also been a superintendent, a principal, and a teacher. Kate Baker is also here, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Children's Scholarship Fund and a longtime advocate for school choice. And before we go back to our listeners, Carl, to you first, please. How much is this whole debate really about money?
Well, I think that money plays an important role. We have we've been dealing with education funding issues in this state for as long as we've had public education that's been funded by property taxes. And I think that, you know, the Claremont decision was pretty clear in 1997 that the state not only had to define adequacy, they had to cost it out, then they had to develop a system to implement it, and then they had to develop an accountability system in which the public could be guaranteed that the money that was being spent wisely. And so funding has always been an issue. I think that when we talk about choices, I think that to some extent we're talking about how much money could perhaps be diverted from public schools, which serve a public good to their local communities, for the private interests of parents. And we're turning public education into a commodity rather than a good.
I mean, it seems like every time we've talked about this, whether it's charter schools or vouchers or tax credits, it comes down to this, Carl, that some public school folks feel like this is a zero-sum game. If you add more money to these alternatives, you're taking money away from the public school system. That seems to be the fundamental debate here. I just want to hear from Carl, then go to you, Kate.
Well, and I think, you know, I think that that is part of the concern. You know, when we talk about charter schools, for example, you know, they get each charter school gets the amount of adequacy for their individual student, which is about $3,600. They get an additional $3,000 from the state for being a public charter school. And then the rest of the money typically comes from public tuition from the schools themselves. I can speak directly to the North Country Charter Academy. I was one of the superintendents that started the North Country Charter Academy. I was a founding member. I am in full support of public charters. But the reality is that school districts, in order to send a student there, have to pay an additional $5,000 or $6,000 on top of the adequacy amount, on top of the amount that they get for charter schools from the state, in order to pay for the tuition for the student to attend that charter school. And it's a valuable school. It provides definitely a quality education for those most high-risk students and have been in full support of it. But the reality is it takes funding away from the local public school. And the other piece that I think, you know, when we talk about how charter schools are so much more cost-effective and they don't cost as much as traditional public schools, one of the reasons for that is because the traditional public school is still responsible for all of the special education costs of any special education students who attend the charter school. So their costs for a special education student are not calculated into the cost of running that charter school, but yet the public school has to handle all of the responsibilities of providing that special education, those services for a student off-site from their regular school.
So let's hit this on the head, Kate. I mean, that's long
sure.
been the fear that, you know,
we,
you take from one and you give from another, and the public schools can't do that innovation that you call for because they face funding constraints made worse by, this is the argument, made worse by all these other alternatives that are getting some public
sure,
money.
Sure, I think we actually agree more than we disagree, in fact. I'm just looking at it as all New Hampshire children, right? Instead of New Hampshire children in one location, right? Whereas my neighbor's children might homeschool or attend a public school or attend a private school, and my tax dollars do in fact help to educate those children also, as well as my own children. And so I'm just looking at it from a broader view, whereas I know that as a community, as a state, where we want to educate all of our New Hampshire children. And I think that wherever those children are, that we should work to help them.
Well, this has long been the concern. And Frank Edelblue, during his testimony before the Executive Council yesterday for his nomination as Commissioner of Education, he looked at this. He talked about his desire for greater school choice and this long dispute over funding. Let's hear.
I have no intention of dismantling public education. I do have every intention of helping the system move forward and offer a product that parents, employers, and educators want for our young people and what our young people deserve. We need to move beyond the idea that choice in education is a zero-sum game, that success of a public charter school is somehow a loss for a standard public school, and recognize that each educational option is strengthened, and as they are strengthened, the system as a whole is strengthened.
Kind of saying what you said a moment ago, Kate. What do you think, Carl? Let's get beyond this zero-sum game, he says.
Well, I think, you know, I don't disagree with the notion that we want to provide the highest quality education for every child within the state of New Hampshire. I think that we can all agree on that. I think that the issue is when you use public funds, there has to be a level of transparency and accountability for those public funds. We expect that from every other aspect of our public service. And I think that this is true for public education as well and public funding. If we are sending students to a private school, there is no transparency to the public on how their money is being spent. There's very little transparency even to the parents themselves, because in a public school, it's very public. What happens in school, the accountability is very public. There are monthly school board meetings. There are annual district meetings. Public education is in the news and on everyone's tongue on a regular basis. What happens behind the doors of a private school is private, and there's a reason for that.
But parents could vote with their feet if they don't like it. They just say, okay, I'm not going to pay that tuition bill. I'm going to send my kid somewhere else.
That, in theory, that's correct. But in a public school, you have the public accountability right up front. For in a private school, the parents are going to have to figure out what that is. They're going to have to figure out what the rules are. There is no responsibility of the private school to be transparent to the public in the spending of the public funds. And that, I think, is a major issue. And we haven't even touched on religious schools.
Or too much on charter schools. We should talk about that a little bit more. But I want to bring another voice into our conversation. Rick Johnson is with us. He's the head of school at Beech Hill School, an independent middle school in Hopkinton, New Hampshire. And Rick, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Hi, thanks for having me, Laura.
Well, tell us a little bit about your school, how many kids you have, and whether you're private, nonprofit, or what your status is there.
So we are a small independent school located in Hopkinton, just on the border between Concord and Hopkinton. We have an enrollment of 34 children right now in grades 6 through 8. Intentionally small and academically rigorous environment where we challenge our students and support them at the same time.
What's been your interaction with the public schools, Rick?
In terms of collaborations, mine personally.
In terms of bringing in kids from the public school to your school through this tuition tax credit.
So we are an independent school. Anyone who would like to apply can apply and attend. And so some of our students have come previously from public schools. Some of our students have come from other independent schools. A number of our students who have previously been homeschooled. And so, again, we're open to anyone who would like to look at us.
Have you gotten any kids coming in through this tuition tax credit program that Kate works on, Rick?
So, again, while every family, I respect their individual privacy of their own financial situations, there have been some families that have shared that they are a part of the CSF program. And so, yes, we've had a couple students that have been involved in that program.
CSF being Children's Scholarship Fund. And
correct.
How have they done at this school?
Phenomenal. Again, all of our students here, again, are pushed and supported equally regardless of who you are, what your background is. But specifically, one family, which has been very public in sharing their story in terms of working with Kate's group and the success that their son found here at the Beech Hill School. Their son was in a situation where he wasn't really being challenged as much in the public school setting that he was at. And again, I mean, no disrespect to that school, but for this individual child, it wasn't working well. I know that there are a number of great public school teachers and great public schools. So again, this is not a referendum on who or what they do. You know, people are working incredibly hard in independent and public schools all across the nation. But for this individual child, they were looking for something different. The child had an opportunity to come here, and where we look for diversity in our school, we are looking to be as accessible as possible, and we have a very generous financial aid program. But for some families, because of our finite resources, we can only offer so much financial aid, and so when there are alternatives to provide greater funding for those families, it helps bridge a gap that otherwise might not exist.
The Children's Scholarship Fund just helped that particular family get over the hump,
correct,
so to speak. How much does it cost to go to Beech Hill School?
Last year, our tuition was $13,800.
Okay, yeah. So how do you feel, Rick, if I could just pull out from the day-to-day and look more broadly, as we've been talking about this morning, a big wave of support for school choice this year, both at the federal level with Betsy DeVos and at the state level with Governor Sununu and Frank Edelblue. What's your take on all that? How do you feel about it as somebody who's involved in this?
You know, in some regard, one would think I might have a stake in it one way or the other. But really, as an independent school, we are looking to put forth the best school that we can. We are not reliant, as an independent school, we're not necessarily reliant on these things. We try to, you know, make sure that we're providing financial aid. We're not a political being. We're a 501c3. And so really our focus is on the kids and their education. And really, for families that it makes sense to be here, and again, hopefully that's a wide group of families. I would hate to, you know, when families come in and if the question is, well, can we afford this? I would like to be able to work with them to say, I hope that's not a deciding factor. I hope that it is. Is this the best fit for my child? And can we find a way to make this happen?
Well, Rick, thank you very much. It's been nice to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
Rick Johnson, head of school at Beech Hill School, an independent middle school in Hopkinton, New Hampshire. Lots of calls. Let's go to them. Lots of emails. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can always respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Rebecca's in Claremont. Hi, Rebecca. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I just wanted to share a little bit of my background with facts. And dealing with Kate, it has been wonderful, and Kathy at the office. My grandson is 8 years old, and he, as Kate has been telling you, he's one of the students at Montessori in Newport. And he is diagnosed with autism. And he was in the public school system, and he wasn't getting exactly what he needed because it's not a one-size-fits-all. He had actually attended a Montessori school. He was supplemented when he was in kindergarten because we didn't have a full-day kindergarten, and he thrived there. And we had the opportunity to, this last year, to look into the Montessori. But, of course, being grandparents, raising their grandchild, there was a financial burden.
Sure.
And so
what happened, Rebecca?
Fortunately, Miss Christie at Newport Montessori gave us this packet to get in touch with Kate and Kathy, and they made it a reality.
Just that little bit of scholarship money put you over the line, and you could afford this.
Absolutely, absolutely, and he is getting hands-on, which he needs. He's getting the social interaction, the independence, all of what is needed for a child on the spectrum.
Well, Rebecca, it's good to hear your story, and I want to let maybe you jump in first, Kate. We've heard from a couple of parents, similar stories.
Yeah, we do give a higher scholarship to special needs children, knowing that they may be, as we were talking before, right, are more higher cost to educate. So our scholarship for a special needs child is $4,646 it was this past year. So for a family like Rebecca, who wanted to choose an alternative school for her child, particularly because of their special needs, it really did make it a possibility for him to attend the school that now he's really thriving in.
Here's an email that came in before the show from Megan, who says, I'm a school psychologist by trade, and through watching many, many children struggle in school over the past two decades, it's become exceedingly clear to me that the single most important factor in student success in school is the, capital letters here from Megan, fit between the student and the school. She says there is no better school or worse school, but each school has its unique character, as does each unique child. Finding the right fit between the child and the school can make all the difference in the world. For a struggling child, she then goes on to talk about her own experience, and it's long, so I won't read the whole thing, but basically her daughter was struggling in middle school, and now she is thriving in a supportive atmosphere at a Waldorf school, and she also got some help from the tuition tax credit. And I just wonder what you think, Carl Ladd. We're hearing, you know, story after story of people who say this really helped.
Well, I don't disagree with the notion that for certain students and certain families, it may make sense for them to opt for a different educational setting depending on the needs of their particular child. My only concern is that when we start taking public funds in order to provide for that with little accountability and little transparency, that we are diverting away energy resources from the public school who are left dealing with all of the students, with all of the needs and all of the requirements, regulations, which Waldorf schools and Montessori schools do not have to follow, that the public schools do, with diminished resources.
Well, and Pam also emailed us before the show, and she says, I am a belief that this voucher program is really just a subsidy for wealthy families who are already able to afford the cost of tuition. Pam says private schools often have a rigorous application process or high tuition costs, and even with a voucher, most children would not be able to attend. Charter schools, she says, run off a lottery system often, and therefore not everyone has access. Pam says public schools are there for every, capitalized, student. They do not get to cherry pick their students. She says we need to focus on strengthening the public school system, not hindering them by funneling away money via vouchers. John has a similar concern from Goffstown. My primary concern, he says, is draining funds from public schools. In Goffstown, our taxes are already quite high, and every single year the school budget increases. The schools already take more than 50% of our property taxes. Taking away these funds to send a student to an alternative school will, without a single doubt, increase our taxes yet again. No thank you, says John. So Pam and John, Kate, are saying, look, just don't mess with this.
Our average family income, just so you know, is about $36,000 a year, the families that we're helping. So they are, in fact, low-income families who are looking for education for their children that's the right fit. And so I feel like that's a really important thing to do. Again, these are all of our children, whether they attend one building or another building. In addition to that, you know, there's 160,000 public school students in New Hampshire, and our scholarship program has 122 students. So, I mean, while I appreciate that the mindset behind that, it's definitely not draining resources. Businesses have donated all of this money, new money, to education.
Okay, gotta catch up there, Kate. Yeah. And coming up, we'll hear the view from the North Country. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, school choice. It's part of NPR and NHPR's effort to look at the first 100 days of the White House and the State House. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Carl Ladd, Kate Baker, right back to our listeners. Mike is joining us from Lee. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. I really respect the concerns of the charter school people, but I think there's two points that we probably want to make. One is we should look at the experience in other states. So my sister lives in Arizona, so I decided to look that up when I heard about the program today. And the Arizona Republic has a very nice long piece on it. And just pulling out one statistic that has to do with the issue about public money versus private, it says that the average corporate tax credit scholarship for students at All Saints Episcopal Day School in Phoenix was $9,405, while the state that same year allocated $4,138 per student in public school. So, you know, there is the potential for draining off money from these credits that would normally go to the state to go to these private schools.
How would
and
you
then
feel?
A really, yeah. And then a really important, there's another really important question that hasn't been addressed yet, and that's that it seems to me that fostering private schools is just one other way to fragment our society by religion and by politics and by ability. And our public schools are something that's brought us together over years, and I would worry to have that loss.
Well, let's pick up on that second point, and thank you for calling, Mike. So just first initially, New Hampshire's not Arizona. There's not nearly that much money
right.
going into these scholarships, Kate. So
right.
we can
and,
just
and it's donated.
And it's donated, but
from
then
individuals, in fact, and businesses
yeah.
that want children to have education opportunities and have the education that's the right fit for them.
Although, as you and Carl discussed slash debated before, you know, there's a question of whether that business money would have gone to the general fund, but definitely not that much money going to private schools as there is in Arizona. But I'm interested.
Well, and I see private schools again as a public good, also, just like
the
Red Cross or a nonprofit is a public good. I mean, they have transparency and accountability.
But I can't afford to send my kid to a private school.
Well, you should apply for a scholarship, Laura.
I don't think the scholarship would help me
cover.
Out much.
Well, and if I lived in a rural area, there'd be transportation mm-hmm. issues, and it's
sure,
it's,
we
it
do
gets
provide
difficult.
Scholarships for homeschoolers also. I think talking about the rural thing is, I mean, I don't want to diverge from your, you know, but.
Well, actually, I do want to talk about
the rural
thing.
That's a really interesting piece of
really
our
important.
Scholarship program, the homeschooler piece. And when you look at our map, in the rural areas where we're seeing those families.
Well, we will talk about the rural piece. It's super important. And in fact, our producer, Christina Phillips, had a long conversation with somebody yesterday about this. So we'll hear about that in just a moment. But I would love to follow up very briefly on Mike's second point, which I think is real interesting. So thank you, Mike. He said that he feels like all these choice options that are expanding and getting public funding, which he has concerns about, is, to quote him, Carl, fragmenting our society. And I wonder what you think.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that if you look at public education and the children in public education, or all of our children, as the colors of the rainbow, a charter school may meet the needs of the blue students, the students who represent the color blue. Another independent school may represent those students who are the color yellow. Public schools take all the colors of the rainbow. They deal with all the children, with all of their facets. And I think that if we end up with a society in which all of the blue students and all of the yellow students and all of the green students attend their own very segmented schools geared just for their particular color, then we are missing the opportunity to create a diverse society that can all work and collaborate and cooperate and function in a civil democratic society. And I think that that is a real concern. I think that we're starting to see real issues within our country of people only choosing to listen to the news that agrees with their viewpoint already, which then solidifies their viewpoint, entrenches it, and then we're no longer open to a broader discussion. I think that, you know, Kate and I can disagree, but we can agree to disagree, but I don't think we need to be disagreeable. I think that there is a tenor within this public education discussion that is really trying to create an us versus them, when I think that we really need to focus on what are all the children going to get for a high quality education, and how are we addressing the needs of all the colors of the rainbow and making sure that all the children succeed in achieving whatever goal they have and their parents have for them.
Well,
but I think that should be done if we're going to use public funds It needs to be done in a public setting with public accountability and public transparency.
And it's a big philosophical question that Mike poses. So thank you, Mike. I know you want to jump in, Kate, but to you, I've got a stack of emails here that I probably won't have time to read all of them. But several of them say, look, no knock against the public schools, but my kid was really, really struggling and the public school did not have the capacity to help him or her.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that that's true in any public endeavor. I think that one of the challenges of the public school system is that we do try to meet the needs of all children, regardless of where they come in. We don't cherry pick students. We don't say that you can come, you don't come. We have to take them all. And we know that parents are not keeping their best kids at home and just sending us the rest. They're sending us their very best, and we are trying within the system that has been imposed upon public education to make every child be the center. Kate was talking about student-centered education. That's what New Hampshire's been moving towards over the last 10 years in ways in which the rest of the country is completely mystified as to how we can do that. And that's because it's been done in a partnership between educators, administrators, the Department of Ed, all working together collaboratively to move that needle forward and really create more of personalization. Personalization in a public school setting with all the rules and regulations that are required also requires funding. Nobody likes to talk about the fact that schools need money, but the reality is, in order to do this well for all children, not just those who fit into a particular box, but for all children, it does require adequate funding. And that is a much broader discussion and probably another radio show. But the funding issue is critical to this discussion and should not be taken away and segmented out of that broader conversation.
Okay, so this is, again, a big philosophical point. And I wonder what you think, Kate, you know, as some kids go here, some kids go there, you know, more homeschooling, more private schooling, more charter schools. That we are becoming more fragmented as a society.
See, I do love talking to Carl because I agree that we can have this great dialogue about things. For me, it does seem more cohesive, right? When you assign children to a school based on zip code, by geography, you're also doing it based on socioeconomics. Versus when you encourage a child to go to the education fit that's right for them, you're encouraging movement and encouraging different communities to form. Our scholarship children are actually more diverse by about 20% than our general population in New Hampshire. In addition to that, we do also have a lot of special needs children, and schools like the Beech Hill School really want those children. They want to embrace diversity and have more and different people in different environments because that's what's enriching to all of us.
Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And by the way, after the show, the conversation always continues. It does not stop once we shut down the mics. It continues online on Facebook, so you can put your comments there as well. Both of you, we talked earlier about the North Country and the particular issues that affect the North Country when it comes to choice, the extent of access, transportation's always an issue. Our producer, Christina Phillips, talked earlier to Dan Vallone. He's director of engagement at Reaching Higher NH, which provides information about public education policy in New Hampshire. And he talked to Christina about how declining enrollment, especially in rural communities, increases the burden of paying for public schools on towns and how that works in with the school choice issue.
We have declining enrollment, which means there are fewer students going to a school, but those schools' costs are not declining. So that is hard to understand. So, like, I would think about it this way. So just imagine a hypothetical community. We have an elementary school serving 300 students. They have one building. That building costs $300,000 a year to maintain. Now imagine that school loses 10 students. So now they have 290 students. They're still going to have to pay the same building cost as they did the year prior when they had 300 students. But now, since they have 10 fewer students, they've lost the state funding that went with those 10 students, which is about $40,000. So that means that the local communities, they need to pick up that difference. And so now the local tax burden has to make up the loss of that state funding. So that's the real concern when it comes to these programs that are going to create vouchers or provide other pathways to private schools, is that when individual students leave the public school system, you're shifting the burden onto that local community to compensate for the reduction in state funding that goes to pupils.
So that, again, that's Dan Vallone, Director of Engagement at Reaching Higher NH. And both of you, Kate, you first, please, what are the particular issues that come up when it comes to school choice in the North Country?
Sure. What came to mind, actually, when listening to him was, it's my understanding, actually, that because of declining enrollment, a traditional school did shut down in New Hampshire, or they wanted to relocate the families, and that's actually what caused the opening of the Surrey Charter School. It was the families in that community who the traditional school, they were telling them they had to take a bus 45 minutes away to get to the school, and they said, no, we're going to start our own charter school in the community in place of the traditional school because it had closed and the children were being told they had to go into a different community for a school. So again, I see it as an answer, right? As an answer when you have these communities solving their educational challenges and or trying to find the best fit for the children, I see it as a solution to that challenge.
What do you think, Carl? You used to work in the North Country as an educator.
Well, I think the issue is a little bit broader than what Kate is talking about, because many communities are really struggling in the North Country to try to keep their schools viable and operational. I worked in SAU 58, which was Northumberland, Stark, and Stratford. By every economic measure, I had probably two of the poorest communities in the state when you consider median income and property values. And, you know, Stratford struggled for years with their high school enrollment, and eventually they ended up deciding to close their school. Some of it was financial, but some of it was the fact that they needed to provide more opportunities for their children. So we ended up signing a tuition agreement with Grofton, and the students attended Grofton High School. It's been a successful partnership since then.
Grofton Public High School.
Grofton Public High School.
And there
correct.
Are tons of these tuition
Absolutely.
Agreements.
Absolutely. There are tuition
the
agreements
state.
All around the state. But what Dan brings up regarding the loss of students, when you factor that in with the loss of disparity aid and stabilization funding, which has occurred over the last several years, we have schools who are really doing outstanding work with the limited resources that they have, continually having to cut back and cut back and cut back on personnel and programs in order to address the declining funding that's coming from the state. More and more burden is being put on the local taxpayer in an already economically depressed area. There has to be a better solution.
Well, let's take one more call. And Sonia joins us from West Lebanon. Hi, Sonia. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. The rainbow analogy got me thinking, if there are certain students, like a blue student or a green student, who feel that a charter school better suits their needs, has there been any thought or discussion of a hybrid model so that student can attend a certain number of hours or days at that charter school, but then also be incorporated in the public school curriculum in some way? Because I think that it is troubling to think that, you know, we're kind of making this homogenous school that doesn't have enough diversity because students are being pulled out based on need.
So a sort of hybrid model, Sonia, and I love the rainbow analogy that you gave earlier. She's picking up on that, where the blue stripe of the rainbow can still attend the school with the pink stripe of the rainbow.
And we already have that. Charter school students are already allowed to attend public schools. Many of them do for co-curricular activities.
Homeschoolers also.
Right.
We have, as I said, charter schools are public schools. The most successful charter schools in the state are the ones that have created those partnerships with districts. Many of them were created by local school districts to address a need. So the students are already kind of involved in this hybrid model. They can attend class. They attend the charter school. They can attend classes at their traditional public school. They can attend the vocational programs through the career and technical education centers, which are also public schools and publicly funded. So that hybrid model that the caller talked about already does exist, and I think that it's one of the hallmarks of the way New Hampshire has structured their public charter schools, which is very different than many other states. And I think that the State Board of Education and the legislature should really be applauded for the way that they have designed these public charter schools and kept them from expanding willy-nilly, but really to meet focused needs.
Boy, and that's another issue that's come up in the legislature that we haven't even had a chance to address yet. But what do you think about our caller Sonia's point,
Kate?
Well,
I think it's interesting. I do see, actually, in my experience with families day in and day out, a rift, in fact, between the politicians and the legislature and the feelings of the actual people, our citizens on the ground. I think that in general, people are more open-minded to education and see it the way Carl describes it, right? There are a lot of education opportunities available for families, and I think they see that. I think we get this polarized discussion. It's political, right? People are making it political, and I think that's politicians and the legislature and not the regular parents and moms and dads and guardians like Rebecca who are on the ground, who are not Republicans or Democrats versus their people looking for solutions for their children.
All right, both of you. Not nearly enough time to hash it all out. And to everybody who sent in their comments, again, the conversation always continues on Facebook. Kate Baker, thank you so much for being here. It was nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you, too.
Kate Baker, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Children's Scholarship Fund. And Carl Ladd, good to see you. Thank you also.
Always a pleasure.
Carl Ladd, Executive Director of the New Hampshire School Administrators Association. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.